You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today will be the final show before the spring break. Most colleges, including Richland Colleges, have the spring break starting next Monday. However, for those that still have some homework to catch up on, the campus computer labs, both Del Rio and the multimedia labs, will be opened for business Saturday and Sunday for the Del Rio lab. So you still have a little time to come to campus and catch up on your schoolwork. And for those that are all caught up and need to get caught up on their sleep, I have good news for you. You can sleep in next week because the campus will be closed from starting Monday through the following Monday. It'll reopen again the following Monday. So I don't have a calendar. Well, I do have a calendar in front of me, come to think of it. And for your new listeners, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's the companion blog to the show. And at the very top, you will have links to the most recent shows. And at the very bottom of that page, you'll have my complete portfolio of all the shows, as well as a short video that I put together on the Pronk Pop Show. It's more a promo. I'm not really talking in the promo, and that's been done. I put it at the bottom because if I put it at the very top, which I initially did, it highlights that video instead of highlighting the news story that I'll be covering. For example, today I'll be covering, which I do every month, the monthly jobs report put out by the Bureau of Labor Statistics that reported on the February situation. But I wanted to say the campus will be closed from the 10th all the way through 6 o'clock in the morning on the 17th. And school begins on the 17th. So you have a week off. Actually, you have 9 days. And some people are cutting classes today and taking off. I can understand that. It's a great time to put your feet up, relax, sleep in, and catch up on any assignments that you may or may not be able to have completed on time. At least you can catch up. I'm all caught up, but I'm exhausted because I've been cutting it. I've been shooting video. I've been putting together a lot of projects, trying to complete a lot of assignments. And I actually got caught up for the first time yesterday. And it's sort of a relief because I really have nothing outstanding to do. So I'm going to refocus my energy on the radio show because I've been somewhat cutting corners. I usually like to prepare at least for every hour I'm on the air, 5 hours. At least 4 to 5 hours. I have not been able to do that, including for this show. I really am short at least 3 hours of preparation. Now, I want to discuss the unemployment situation as well as the economy because I really didn't have time to complete what I was doing on the last show because I was going over the president's budget and the fact that the economy is sliding into another recession. I think that's still going to happen. The unemployment rate actually went up to 6.7%, and the number of new jobs created was 175,000. That's the so-called non-farm payroll. Now, what surprises me, well, it shouldn't surprise me anymore, but I was listening to several newscasts as I was both driving in at home as well as on the television set in the newsroom. And they call today's jobs report decent. Now, 175,000 is definitely positive. It's not, we didn't have a decline in the number of jobs created, and that's good. But they never make any attempt at all to relate either the number of jobs created or the unemployment rate to the fact that that unemployment rate means there are over 10 million people unemployed. They can't find jobs, many of them for more than 6 months. And you need to understand, and it's a key thing, and I repeat it and repeat it and repeat it, Because eventually I hope the mainstream media will catch on to the fact that you really have to give the big picture and give some context to the jobs report. And here's there are two key factors. Every month, and I mean every month, without fail, there are people that enter the labor force for the first time. They're what's called new entrants into the labor force by the Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics. Now, who are these people? They're primarily teenagers and people in their early 20s that are entering the job market looking for their first job. They're high school graduates or dropouts, or college graduates or dropouts. Now, some of you work when you were in high school as well as college. After you go to your second or third job, you're not considered a new entrant. But every month, and you'll get a range of estimates, you need somewhere between 130,000 to 150,000 new jobs just to absorb the growth in the population as reflected in the new entrants into the job market. Every nation has this challenge or problem to address. So 175,000 jobs sounds like a lot of jobs, but it isn't, because anywhere from 130,000 on the low side to 150,000 are needed just to have a job for people that are new to the labor force. Now, what you want to do is over time, you can't do it all in 1 month, you want to get back to a labor unemployment rate that's near full employment. And most economists, like, again, there are always going to be a range of estimates, would say somewhere between 3 and 4% represents near full employment. It's not full employment. You're never going to get to zero. There are always people transitioning from one job to another. They might go on vacation, or they might just decide to rest for a couple of months. But you're never going to have full employment in the sense of a zero unemployment rate. But we've had in the course of the history of the United States, unemployment rates under 3% as well as under 2%. So it's not impossible, but you need a growing economy. And what I mean by that, somewhere between 3 and 5% growth rates. We don't have that. And like I said last show, the economy for the entire 2013, was growing at 1.9%. The prior year, and that's 2012, it was growing at 2.8%. So you can see we're gradually, I like the way I'm characterizing, it's sort of like we're sliding into another recession. We're slowly stagnating. It's not getting any better. It's not getting any worse. The only good news is it's not really getting any worse. But economic, the growth of the economy, the U.S. economy, is gradually going down, down, and down. The way I characterize it, we're at approximately going at two-thirds speed. And by speed, I mean the trend in economic growth for the United States over many decades is about 3%. That's the average, about 3.1%. It depends on what years what month and year you start and what month and year you end. But a 3% is a good number to keep in your head. Now, that doesn't mean we can't grow faster than 3%. There have been many months we've grown at 4, 5, 6%. And that's truly what you need to happen for the unemployment rate to go down. Because the second part of the story is you need at least 150,000 to 170,000 jobs to get the unemployment rate down a tenth of a percent, in addition to the 130 to 150,000 jobs you need to absorb new entrants in the labor force. So the rule of thumb, I use it, many economists use it, and it does change over time. But today you need at least 300,000 jobs, 300,000 jobs to be created. That's non-farm payroll jobs to be created for the unemployment rate to go down a tenth of a percent. Now, keep in mind, 1 month is not enough. You got to do this every month. And to do that, the economy needs to be growing at somewhere between 3 and 4%, roughly around 3.5%. We're not near that. We're not even at two-thirds that. The growth in the last quarter was 2.4%. Those were the revised numbers for the fourth quarter of 2013. And the Bureau of Economic Analysis, which is in the Department of Commerce, also came out with the statistic that in 2013, the economy grew at only 1.9%. We really should be growing at least twice that. And we need to be doing that for a couple of years. We haven't been. And as a result, you've had persistently high unemployment rates, above 6%. Other than the Great Depression, this is the longest stretch of high unemployment rates that the United States economy has ever had. And I need to remind you, when President Barack Obama took the oath of office for the first time in January of 2009, the unemployment rate was at 6.7%. 6.7%. Where is it today? At 6.7%. We still have not recovered to the previous high of employment of 146.6 million in November of 2007. And the reason why we haven't is we simply have not kept up with the fact that every month more and more people are entering the labor force. Why I wish people well that have a good-paying job, there are millions of Americans that are hurting because the real unemployment rate is more than twice that. See, the government does not count people that when they call and they do surveys, they can't call everybody, so they do a survey. And you got to keep in mind the household survey from where the unemployment number rate comes. That's only 60,000 households. It would be too expensive for the U.S. government to try to get it from everybody. So they do a sample. I think you understand what I'm trying to get at. You literally cannot afford to call everyone, so they do a sample. It's a limited sample, a very limited sample. It has a certain accuracy, but it's not very good. But that's the number you'll hear on the news today. I heard it on the news. And what was drives me crazy when people that really don't know what they're talking about say this was a decent, that was the word used, this is a decent job report. No, it's not. I would say below average. And average, in my mind, the minimum for an average, not a good, not a bad, but just an average job report would be 300,000 jobs. We're 125,000 jobs short of that. This is subpar. It's mediocre. It's not decent. Are you out of your mind? We're barely keeping up with the number of people that every month enter the labor force, namely your teenagers. And I need to say this. This one somewhat surprised me. There was a big jump in the There was a jump in the teenage unemployment rate. Remember, those are people 16 to 19 years old. And I have all this information on prompopstuff.wordpress.com. So I have a chart, and all you need to do is go to Table A. It's towards the bottom of the page, and you'll see the unemployment rate for teenagers. And those are 16 to 19-year-olds. It jumped from 20.7% to 21.4%. That's a fairly big move. And for the entire Obama administration, it has been over 20%. It's been over 25%. And as I was saying yesterday, what is the president doing about this? He's proposing increasing the minimum wage from $7.25 an hour to $10.10 or higher, whatever Congress will pass. Now, Congress is not going to pass anything, because the House is controlled by the Republicans and the Senate by the Democratic Party. So you very much have divided government. Nothing's happening. That's why this economy is stagnating. And it will stagnate until one party gets control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency. Now, does that mean if the Democrats were to do that, I think it would be a total, complete disaster. But I'm not very optimistic on the Republicans either. And the reason I say that, the last time that was the case was when George Bush was president, and they were running deficits. several hundred million dollars every year. However, not trillion-dollar deficits that Barack Obama was running. Now, gradually, what happened is the deficits, which were government outlays, government spendings exceeds total tax collections. It's gradually going down, but it never balances. And I point that out because what drives the growth rate down? It's uncertainty. And what causes uncertainty? It's out-of-control government spending. You've got to connect the dots. See, that's my frustration with the news, especially the news you get on the television networks. They don't try to connect the dots. They purposely don't want to connect the dots. And I was listening, and I usually don't have time anymore to listen to Rush Limbaugh, but today I did. I was doing something where I could listen. And he reminded me of something. I don't watch enough news to make an informed judgment. But he watches a lot of news, and so do you. Given the persistently high unemployment rates, have you heard many stories on this? How this is really hurting the American people across the country? You really haven't. Oh, they'll report the numbers and call it decent. This isn't decent. This is indecent. The stimulus package didn't work. It's a failure. It's the wrong economic policy. And increasing taxes is the wrong economic policy. What needs to be done is dramatic, significant cuts across the board in the federal government. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, is the government. Ronald Reagan was perfectly right. He might have not have done enough about it, but government is the problem. And it's really not government per se. It's Congress is truly the source of the problem. Because they have controlled the purse strings. They're the ones that approve the budgets, approve the authorization bills, and approve the appropriation, which is the money to pay for it. We're at least 10 years or more from a balanced budget. Either if the Democrats were to really get power, we won't see a balanced budget for the next 100 years. They're congenitally unable to do that. And I always try to make the point is you have to balance your budget. Families have to do it. Businesses definitely have to do it if they want to stay in business. So do cities, counties, colleges, schools. That's the way people make sure that they have enough money to pay the bills. They have budgets and they keep to the budgets and they make sure that they're balanced. The United States government, and you can look at the numbers, is literally incapable of balancing their own budget. And the reason is they're afraid of cutting programs. They're afraid of eliminating departments. And that truly needs to be done. They are scared, you know what, to deal with the problem of entitlements and welfare. And by entitlements, I mean the two biggies are Social Security and Medicare, and now Obamacare. Those are driving the deficits, but also out-of-control welfare program. All of these areas have to be cut, as well as all the federal departments, yet there is no real move to do that. Instead, what both parties do is play I call it the congressional budget baseline game, where everything is 10 years, so they'll throw out a big number. Oh, we're going to cut government spending by $1 trillion or $2 trillion or $4 trillion. It sounds real good. But when you look at the numbers, do they actually cut anything? No, they don't. What they do is they cut, all the cuts are 8, 9, and 10 years out. That's when the cuts. Now, what's the problem with that? The current Congress can't bind a Congress that hasn't been elected yet. That's why you need to focus really on the current year and the next year. And forget about the rest. And this year we'll probably run a deficit where government outlays will exceed revenues by, I would say, approximately $600 billion. Yeah, that's better than the trillions that Obama was running in 2009, 10, 11, and 12. There's been some improvement, but not thanks to him. See, what's coming back as the economy slowly grows, you'll see a slight, and it is a slight, $100 to $200 billion increases in revenues. For example, the president's budget is estimating that the revenues for fiscal year 2015, which begin 1 October, will be $3.3 trillion. That's a round number. He wants to spend just slightly under 3.9. And in round numbers, that's about a $600 billion deficit. The actual estimate, for what it's worth, is $546 billion. There's not a prayer in the world that you can offer that's going to get you that. Because if what happens when the economy slides into a recession, and I think that's what's slowly happening, we'll wake up one day and we'll hear the unemployment numbers will start jumping again. Companies will be laying off. That's what happened in 2008, especially the latter half of 2008. That's when the companies were really laying off people. And that, and employment always lags what's happening in the economy. We didn't really hit bottom in the job situation until December of 2009, when the employment level was, in round numbers, 138 million. And you could see we still have not hit the previous peak of 146 million. Ladies and gentlemen, if we had the right economic policies, we wouldn't have 10 million people unemployed. And that's the government's low number. The real number is the U6 number. And I didn't have time to pull it up. Maybe I do have it in the table, and I do apologize for this. What annoys me about the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and I wish they would do this, they have a section in Table 1 that gives the it's called unemployment rates. And it breaks it down by category, you know, 16 years and older, 20 years and older, 16 to 19, white, black. I also need to say that the black unemployment rate is 12%. Teenage unemployment rate is 21.4%. That compares with the overall average of 6.7%. But what economists really look at is the U6 rate. What I gave you was commonly referred to as the official or headline U3 rate. And that's about, I don't have it in front of me, and I do apologize, but it's about 11%. I don't have it at the top of my head. I was going to paste it in, but I didn't do it because I was rushed for time. You see, we have people that have been looking for jobs for so long and getting no results. They're no longer counted by the Department of Labor Bureau of Labor Statistics as looking for a job. They're not considered unemployed because they're discouraged workers. And what happens is, day after day, week after week, month after month, what do? They look for a job, and they get absolutely nowhere. They either get very few interviews, or even if they get an interview, they don't get a job offer. Why? Because competition is fierce. It's not a case of where one or two or three people are applying. In many of these job opening situations, you have dozens of people, in some cases hundreds of people applying for one position. And that's why they get discouraged. When you're doing everything you should be doing, filling out applications, sending out letters, sending out emails, trying to network, and nothing happens, anyone's going to be discouraged. And what that means is when they're sampled, in other words, when the U.S. Census Department, when the census employees that are contracted by the Bureau of Labor Statistics to do these surveys, when they ask them, have you looked for a job in the last 4 weeks? Have you applied for a job? What these people say, they're honest. They say, no, I gave up. I've been looking for months, haven't been able to find it. Last month I didn't look, can't find anything. And that's all across the country. All across the country. Have you seen many news stories on this? No, absolutely not. Because we don't want to shine the bright light on the fact that President Obama's economic policies, as well as the Democratic Party's economic policies, are a failure. His advisors were saying by now we should have unemployment rates below 5%. I wish it were true. But we're at the exact same unemployment rate as the day Barack Obama took the oath of office. The exact unemployment rate. And we still have not got back to an employment level of 146.6 million. And that was November of 2007. We're coming up on the 7th anniversary of that. 7 years. I want you to let that rattle around in your head. You see, ladies and gentlemen, we should be employing over 155 million people. We have a jobs gap of at least 10 million. Actually, it's much higher than that. I'm trying to give you the low number. Don't want to discourage you too much. So the president's answer is increase the minimum wage. And study after study after study by professional economists will say that every time they have increased the minimum wage, who gets hurt? Who gets hurt? It's teenagers, people in their early 20s that are looking for their first-time job. And many of them get their first-time job, and then they're laid off because the minimum wage goes up. Now, it's nice. I'll be the first one to say, if you're making $7.25 and you're one of the lucky ones that keep their job if the minimum wage goes to $10.10 or whatever number they come up with, eventually gets passed, well, you're the lucky ones. But look around you. Go to the left and go to your right. One of your buddies is going to be on the street earning zero. You see, the major supporters of increasing the minimum wage have always been the unions. Always. And their allies, the Democratic Party. Now, why? Now, the unions, with very few exceptions, if any, are big supporters of the Democratic Party. Major contributors, not only in terms of money, but in terms of people and getting out the vote. So the unions demand, and they do get it, that the minimum wage periodically go up. They'd like it to go up every year. Can't get that done. But they're the major special interest that wants to get the minimum wage up. Now, how many members of the unions do you think earn the minimum wage? Very, very, very few. Because less than 2% of the population actually, or 2% of the people in the workforce actually, earn the minimum wage. Most earn much, much higher than the minimum wage. The average pay in the United States hourly, in round numbers, is around $20. You can scroll down, and I'll scroll down for you, but if you go to the pronkpops.wordpress.com website, and I'll have this up, the show up, by tomorrow by 5, because this is going to be a short show. I've been told in no uncertain terms that the studio will be closing down at 5 o'clock sharp, so I have to wrap it up prior to that because I got to save it. But by tomorrow, I'll have the show up. I already have the notes for this up, but I'm going to add some more information to it. So I was going to look up what is the hourly wage. It's about $20 and change. Yep, I was very close. The average hourly earnings is $20.41. See, most people earn a lot more than the minimum wage. Only a small, small, small percentage of the workforce actually earns the minimum wage. And those are the people that have limited or no job experience and limited or no skills. They're looking for their first job. That's when the president goes around the country. And he's been doing this for months. I'm not picking on him. I think almost every time he talks, he mentions this as if this was the cure for an unemployment situation. No, it's not. Every time the minimum wage has gone up, who gets hurt? Number one, teenagers. Number two, black and Hispanic teenagers. Because why the teenage unemployment rate is above 20%, the black teenage unemployment rate is over 30, 35. You can get that at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. You really got to dig for it, but it is there. And periodically I go to it. That's a lot more detail than most people want. And it was approaching 50%. So who gets hurt? It's the guy looking for his first job or the woman. Not the union. The union does it so it can demand higher hourly and mostly hourly, but also salary wages for their members. They want it to go up, not because they earn it. They earn a lot more. You better believe they earn a lot more. And in the past, it was a way for the unions to discriminate against blacks and Hispanics and Asians, to exclude them. And that's the history of the minimum wage. I'm against the minimum wage. Totally, completely would abolish it. I'm for anyone that wants to work to negotiate a salary with an employer. you might be worth a lot more than the minimum wage. Don't sell yourself short. Many people start at the minimum wage, and when the employer determines this person shows up, he's responsible, he's a hard worker, what's the first thing he's going to do? He's going to give him a raise or a bonus. The only reason employers pay the minimum wage is A, that's the most they can afford, and B, these types of jobs, you don't know who you're hiring, because many of them have no job experience or very limited job experience and little or no skills. So until you have worked at a business or wherever, it could be a charity or a church, whatever, until you have an employment history and some work experience, there's a big question mark over your head. So that's why employers pay the minimum wage. But they want to attract and retain hard work, good workers. They know they can't keep them by paying the minimum wage. So the first opportunity they can, they will pay more money. But the person that's looking for the job that would really take anything, and those are primarily teenagers and people in their early 20s, what happens is they have it's increasingly more difficult for them to find a job, any job, part-time, full-time, any job. And the reason is because of the competition. You have millions of unemployed people. So they don't start on that career ladder. They don't get that work experience. Eventually, if you keep looking, you will. But it might be a year or two or three or four down the road. So the answer is not a higher minimum wage. You know, I would say the best thing they could do is eliminate it. That doesn't mean the going rate will dramatically fall. What it does mean is some people that never would have been hired would be able to find a job at a $5 an hour or $6 an hour or $6.50 an hour. It's a start. It's a chance. It's an opportunity. And if you come in on time, dress appropriately, work hard, you're going to get a lot more than the minimum wage. The answer is not a higher minimum wage. That's the wrong economic policy. But surprise, surprise, that's what President Obama wants, and that's what the Democratic Party keeps saying. Now, they'll try to sell it at, well, you need a living wage. You need a living wage. You can't live on $7.25. I'll be the first one to say, I know. It'd be very difficult to live on $7.25 an hour, even if it was a full time. In other words, 40 hours a week, four weeks a month. That's not a lot of money, folks. But most of these teenagers, where are they living? They're living with their family. Not forever. When they're 16 or 17 or 18, they're probably still living with their family. And at some point between 18 and 22, if they had a job and making decent money, what happens? They rent their own apartment. They can only do that when they have a full-time job. And to keep that full-time job, they demonstrate to their employer that they're a reliable worker, an employee. So the answer is not the minimum wage. And the answer is not higher taxes either. The name of the game is economic incentives. You need to have the right economic incentives to encourage individuals to form businesses, start businesses, because that is where, historically, the jobs come from. It's not from the government. It is from the private sector. And in the private sector, it's not the large corporations. Yes, the large corporations do employ tens of thousands of employees. No argument there. But where the net or the new job creation is small businesses, usually five or less. And the reason they're the net job creators is there's so many of them. And when you add the mid-sized businesses, 500 or less, that is the bulk of the jobs. 80-90% of the new jobs created in this country are in the private sector, and is primarily from new businesses, small businesses, not your giant corporations whose names you know, but businesses who most people don't know their names. They're your local new businesses. Those are the entrepreneurs, the people that take the risk, even in this slow economic times, to start a business. For example, Microsoft at one time employed two people. Now last time I looked, we're employing 80,000 to 90,000 people. I know they've had some layoffs. And what you're hoping is 1,000 Microsofts bloom. That small business becomes a mid-sized business, becomes a large business. Wealth, income, and jobs are created in the private sector. To grow the private sector, you need the correct economic environment to encourage people to take those risks. Higher taxes do not encourage people to take risks. They do the exact opposite. And out-of-control government spending with massive deficits year in, year out, do not encourage people to take risks. And persistently high unemployment rates do not encourage people to take risks. What you want are lower tax rates. Note, I didn't say lower taxes. I just said lower tax rates. Is that what the president is offering or the Democratic Party are offering? No, they're increasing taxes. They're coming up with new ones. Their solution for these massive deficits is more taxes. It's just the opposite of what I'm trying to get at. What you need are lower tax rates. What you need is to scrub the existing income tax. We're in the 100th year of the income tax. I was trying to do a back-of-the-envelope calculation in my head as I was driving. I said, in those 100 years, now it didn't all happen at once, but about every year, the size of the tax code gradually increased. It works out to over 500 pages a year. Last time I checked, the number of pages in the Internal Revenue Code and the regulations was over 65,000. It was heading towards 70,000. No one understands it, really. The IRS doesn't even understand their own code. It's way too complex. It needs to be eliminated and replaced by a broad-based consumer tax. Now, why? I'll spend a minute on this. Why? First of all, we waste, and that's the right word, anywhere from $300 billion to $500 billion every year on what's called tax compliance. That's a fancy word for saying filling out the tax returns. All the time and energy and people that do that. That's a lot of money. It's not producing any goods or service. That is just filling out the paperwork to determine how much you owe so you can write a check to the government. That's a system that they came up with over 100 years. And I scratched my head. I think, you know, a lot has happened in 100 years. Technology-wise, it's like night and day. We don't need an income tax anymore. What we need is a broad-based consumption tax that's collected when you buy a new good or service. In other words, you would never have to fill out a tax return again. Either an individual or a business or corporation would never have to fill out a tax return again. In other words, you would save at least $300 billion to $500 billion. I think it's even higher than that. It's somewhat hard to quantify that. And you would eliminate most, not all, but most of the people in the Internal Revenue Service. And I understand Ted Cruz wants to eliminate the IRS. I'm all for that. We don't need them. We truly don't need those bureaucrats. Do away with it. Close the IRS. Now, people say, well, are you crazy? The government needs money to run on. I understand it needs money to run on. And I'll get back. I'll give you my short example. Every time you buy a loaf of bread, and I'm going to keep it real simple, but you can go in a grocery store today in Dallas, and for $1, really 99 cents, but for a dollar, you can buy a loaf of bread. Now, what's included in the price of that $1 loaf of bread? Yes, you're right. All the payroll taxes, all the income taxes that businesses have to pay. It's been estimated that on average, about 23 cents out of that dollar is taxes. And we're talking federal taxes. We're not talking any sales taxes. We're talking federal government taxes, payroll and income. You're paying for it right now, and it's in that loaf of bread. What I'm saying is stop with the businesses and individuals filling out tax returns, which are we're approaching that time of the year. Many of you probably have already done it. We don't need to do it. We had a broad-based consumption tax, and the rate would be 20%, ladies and gentlemen. In other words, out of that dollar loaf of bread, 20 cents would be the tax that would replace the current taxes on average of about 23%. This is not a revenue neutral proposal, by the way. And that was one of the problems that I had with the fair tax. But it's fairly simple. All the price, in other words, in the price, when you go to the cash register with that $1, you buy a loaf of bread. What's going to happen? 20 cents out of that dollar will be sent to the federal government. That will finance the federal government. And everybody has to pay it. Hard to avoid that. And see, that's what retailers do today. In every state in this union has a sales tax. They're paying the state sales tax goes to the state. If you're in Texas, it goes to Texas. If it's in New York, it goes to New York. Now, some places like New York, not only do they have a city, county, and state tax, but what I'm saying is we replace all federal taxes, all your income tax, your both personal and corporate, capital gains taxes, gift taxes, estate taxes, all the various fees that the federal government has here, there, and everywhere. All, in other words, the only revenue that the United States government would be getting if you went to a broad-based consumption tax is that 20%. So when you go and buy a loaf of bread, the retailer sends 20 cents of that dollar to the federal government. Now, the more you buy, the more taxes you pay. And usually if you're buying a lot, is because you're earning a lot. So that's how and that's what needs to be done to encourage businesses to be formed. Have a much simpler system of raising revenues. And the software is available. It would be fairly routine situation that what the retailers will do is send 20 cents on the dollar. So if they collect $1 million, they send $200,000 to the federal government. And they'd be doing that every day, every week, every month. Now, some of you progressives out there and some of your liberals are going to say, but sales tax, this is a sales tax and it's regressive. In other words, it hurts the low income more. That's not fair. That's not fair. President likes to say that. We need a tax code that's fair. It needs to be fair. Well, this is fair. Everyone pays the same rate. If you buy more, you pay more in taxes. You buy less, you pay less. But there's a detail I've left out. And this is modeled after the fair tax. Slightly different wrinkle. They like to bring up the living wage. Well, there's certain necessities that everyone needs. You need food. You need shelter or an apartment or a house to live in. You need clothing. There's certain necessities of life. You need to pay an electric bill. You need heating to keep you warm in the winter and cool in the summer, especially in August in Texas. I agree. And we don't want the poor, the people with low incomes, to have a regressive tax. So everybody, every single person in the United States would get every month from the government, really from you and me, but from the government, a $500 check, really a credit, for the taxes that you're paying on the necessities of life. For example, you need to buy bread, you need to buy milk, you need to buy meat, vegetables, you name it. You need to pay rent. Well, in all of those transactions, you're paying taxes because they're embedded in the price. So to make sure that the burden does not fall on the low income, everybody, we're treating everybody fairly here, will get a $500 rebate. Let's say you're the American family, mom, dad, and two kids. You're the average four-person family with 2.1 kids, really two kids. You would get $2,000 rebate every month from the government without fail. That's reimbursing you for the taxes that you're paying for the necessities of life. That's important. It's rather simple because we don't want people like we have today when they check out at the counter, and you've seen it. They either have these vouchers or their SNAP card, looks like a credit card. It hauls everything up. We're doing away with that. If you want a gallon of milk, let's say milk is $3 a gallon. 60 cents of that $3 gallon of milk will be going to the federal government. So the $500, let's keep it real simple. An individual gets $500. That is to pay for all the taxes on the necessities. That's what that check is for. Now, after you have the necessities, if you want to spend a lot more money on other things, well, that's your right. You know, the more income you have, the more you spend, the more you're going to give the federal government money. But everyone knows what it is, and it's hard to avoid. It's 20 cents in the price of all your goods will be going to the federal government, collected by the retailers. They're doing it today, folks, for the states and local jurisdictions. This is a minor programming change. The only thing you get, and what they do is whatever their proceeds is, they're going to be sending 20 cents to the federal government for every dollar that of new goods and services. Now, I've only touched the surface, and there's a lot of benefits to this, but this is just a small, not a small, this is a huge example of what needs to be done to encourage people to form businesses and grow their businesses, develop their businesses, hire more people. It also has the effect of encouraging savings. Because you won't be when you invest your money, you won't be paying a capital gains tax when you sell the investment or when you get a dividend check. When you sell your house, there won't be a federal income tax consequence because the broad-based consumption tax is paid for new goods and services. So it's encouraging people to save. And what do people save for? To go to college, to buy a house, to buy a car, to start a new business. So it has the great effect of encouraging savings, which you need to in turn encourage investment. And what would happen in terms of the United States versus the world? What would happen? You would have a massive flow of capital investment into the United States. Just think about it. There would be no more taxes on labor, employment, none, zero. The taxes will be on consumption when you actually purchase a new good and services. So it has a number of positive effects. It's a very much a virtuous circle and would grow and grow and grow the economy. And why is that important? We need economic growth to have more jobs created, more wealth created, more income created. That's what President Obama should be proposing and working out with the Republicans. Is he doing that? No. He's stuck in a mindset, a Marxist-Leninist progressive mindset, that it's this class warfare nonsense that he spews, that he got from his mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, a communist Stalinist that indoctrinated and filled his head with poison. Do you expect anything else out of our president? He doesn't have a clue what needs to be done. He keeps regurgitating the same thing. We need more investment. Investment is a code word for we need more government spending. We need more taxes. We need a higher minimum wage. Has it worked? No, it's been a failure. The guy is a failure, and the Democratic Party is a failure. Why do you think the fastest-growing political affiliation in the United States today is independent? Because the American people are woken up to the fact that the Democrats don't give a damn about the American worker, and the Republicans are not much better. That's why over 40% of the people today are registering as independents, not as Democrats, not as Republicans. And that what scares to death both political parties. And they both better change, or you're going to see a new political party that will be advocating, for example, the replacement of the current federal Internal Revenue Code. Do away with it. Do away with the code. Do away with the IRS. Replace it with a broad-based consumption tax. I call it the fair tax less. Fair tax less. It's simple. It's easy to understand. It's easy to collect. You're doing away with hundreds of billions of dollars of wasteful spending on just filling out tax returns. In other words, no more April 15th for anybody. Wouldn't you like that? I would, and I think most Americans would. And your gross pay, whatever it is, that will be your net paycheck. There'll be no more deductions for Social Security taxes or Medicare taxes or disability taxes. Why? They will be collected at the cash register when you buy that $1 loaf of bread. Or whatever you buy at whatever price, 20% is embedded in the price. And that's actually a tax cut, because on average, it's been estimated by economists that are smarter than me that embedded in the price of goods and services in the United States is about 23% is federal taxes, payroll and income. And I'm making it a lot simpler to understand. It's 20%. What would happen to our economy after a transition period? It would be booming. Why would it be booming? It would encourage savings. It would be encouraging investments. And that is what you need to grow an economy. You wouldn't have business owners having to focus on the tax consequences. They wouldn't. They wouldn't have to fill out returns. They wouldn't have to do tax planning and research to figure out what is the best way to structure a transaction. In other words, the whole wasteful government bureaucracy, as well as the time spent by everyone in this country on taxes, would be eliminated. Now, there is a cost, and that is you need some software changes, and you need to make sure that the retailers are sending in the 20 cents on the dollar for every dollar they're ringing up for a good sale of a new good or service. But they're doing it already, folks. They're doing it already. I don't care. Any retail store that I go into in Texas, they're collecting a sales tax today. And that's true across this country. I know there are a few places that don't have a sales tax. But bear with me. You are already paying those federal taxes in the price of whatever good or service you're buying. That's the beauty of a broad-based consumption tax. It eliminates all the compliance or paperwork, all of it, or virtually all of it. It doesn't require a huge bureaucracy and a huge tax code and regulations to interpret or determine what's income, what's an expenditure, what's deductible, what's a credit. All of that would be swept away. Now, why hasn't it happened? Not hard to understand. There are literally tens of thousands of lobbyists on K Street in Washington, D.C. that work for corporations and businesses, as well as charities that have vested interest, as do many of the politicians, in keeping the existing tax code the way it is. Even though everyone will concede, no one understands it, it's way too complicated, it's way too inefficient, and the economic consequences, it dramatically cuts down on the economic growth rate of this country. Now, I'm giving you one idea. It's not a new idea. It's not an idea of mine. There have been people that have been advocating consumption taxes for decades, and there are different forms of them. Initially, I was for a flat tax. Not anymore. I'm now for the fair tax. I call it fair tax less because I would tweak it a little bit. I'd keep it real simple so everyone can understand it. And it's not a new tax. It's a tax that will replace all federal taxes. Income taxes, capital gain taxes, payroll taxes. You wouldn't have to be bothered with that. You nor your business owner. You'll be paying it when you check out at the cash register. And what the business will do then is transfer to the government 20% of what it's taking in. I'm trying to keep it real simple here. But that's in effect what would happen. No more tax returns. No more. Ever get a pay stub where they tell you what they've taken out in taxes? No more of that. If you're hired at $1,000 a week, you're going to be paid $1,000 a week. And if you're going to say, well, how could that work? The government has to have money to pay Social Security and Medicare and pay for the government. Ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be collected every time you go to the store. There will be no more April 15th. No more tax returns. Your gross pay will be your net pay. Now, this is one idea you would think that a leader of the country could get behind. Barack Obama is not that person. He is stuck in a 100-year-old idea. Sock it to the rich. You can take every dollar that the rich earns, and the government is still would have massive deficits. That is not a solution. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. In other words, to grow the economy, you have to reduce uncertainty. To reduce uncertainty, you got to do certain things. One is make the collection of taxes easy, and you can't avoid them, and do away with all the bureaucracy and all the compliance cost. That in and of itself would lead to a boom in this country, a boom. But not only in jobs and income, it would provide a strong economic incentive for every individual to save. Our saving rate has gone down, down, and down. Compared to other countries, it stinks. This would, in one swift move, encourage people to save. Why? You have a choice. You can consume, in other words, spend the money and pay taxes, or you can save your money. And if you save your money, your savings, what you're going to put it to work, you're going to invest in it, would not incur a capital gains when you sold it. What do you think this would do to businesses? This would encourage massive increases in business formation, which is exactly what we need to grow this economy. Not the repeatedly failed Keynesian economic policies of the 30s and unfortunately today. It was a bad idea in the 30s and it's a bad idea today. Government is not the answer. Government is profoundly the problem. They are getting in the way of the American people. We have a political class, both Democrats and Republicans. They're careerist. They're not for change. They're for the status quo. Right now, in the neighborhood of Washington, D.C., you have an event that I have really had not time to listen to. I usually, and hopefully in the weekend, I'll have some time. It's CPAC, and it raises money for a conservative group. And I believe it was Limbaugh or Laura Ingraham or someone. I listened to talk radio. But I had the same reaction that they did. There's a feeling that, and I'll cut to the chase. It's no longer CPAC. It's a Republican establishment event. You see, the problem, ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot of Republicans that talk conservatives. Do they truly give us limited government? Do they give us balanced budget? No, but they have to go there because if they have any ambitions in the future to run for president or higher office, they got to go to CPAC. So it's really becoming a Republican Party event. We need a freedom event to limit the size of the federal government because most of the people, the politicians there, with few exceptions, they like it the way it is. They're not proposing dramatic changes in the size and the scope of the federal government. They're not proposing fundamental reform in the way we collect taxes in this country. They know it's needed, but they keep giving the excuse, the excuse, the excuse. That's what turns people off, both from the Democrats and the Republican. They're not results-oriented. If they were, we would not have a 6.7% unemployment rate. We should have an unemployment rate under 3%, under 2%. There shouldn't be 10, 15, or 20 million Americans unemployed today in America. At most, there should be 3 or 4 million between jobs. And that's entirely possible. Instead, we have a bloated, huge federal bureaucracy that literally is untouchable, and a huge military intervening all around the world, resulting in the deaths of your sons and daughters and spending not billions, trillions of dollars in war. It's sad because this country is becoming less and less and less free. There is going to be a revolution in this country, a revolt of the American people. I hope it's peaceful because they've had it up to here. and they're walking with their feet. They're walking out of the Democratic Party, and they're walking out of the Republican Party. Why? There's these political elites, these career politicians, are not listening to the will and desires and the concerns of the American people. That is the reality. Because if they were, we would not have trillion-dollar deficits for as far as the eye can see. These are not serious people. They're scared people. They're scared to do what's right. They're scared to do what the American people are demanding. They're scared to being successful. And it's going to take the formation of another political party to have any chance of success. There's a lot of talk show hosts. I would say the overwhelming majority of talk show hosts in commercial radio. We have to change the Republican Party. We have to become active. Ladies and gentlemen, that is a lost cause. Why waste your breath? Why waste your money? Why waste your time? These people are fighting you today. They have been a failure. They can't communicate. They can't get their message out. And don't get me started on the press. The press is largely controlled by large corporations that do not want competition. They make sure that the message goes out is very limited in the range of acceptable public opinion. I don't watch any television, especially newscasts. They are a complete waste of time. And example number one, as I'm driving in to Richland College today, well, the Bureau of Labor Statistics has put out its monthly job report, and it's a decent job report. A decent job report? Are you out of your mind? See, that's what the corporations would like you to think, and that's what the power of bees would like you to think. It's not a decent job report. It's below par. It's mediocre. It stinks. We should be growing at 300,000, 400,000, 500,000, 600,000 jobs every month for months. That would be an outstanding job report. Not 175,000 jobs were created. When you need a minimum of 130,000, it's really closer to 150,000, just to keep up with population growth of teenagers and young people looking for their first job. You need a minimum of 300,000 jobs to legitimately reduce the unemployment rate by just a tenth of a percent. So it wasn't a good jobs report. It's just more of the same. We're really going at two-thirds speed, and that's being optimistic, folks. We should be going at more than 100%. We shouldn't be growing at 1.9% for last year. We should be growing at 4 or 5%, but not as long as you have the failed economic policies of both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. The American people are demanding results. They're demanding you listen to them. You listen to their concerns. And Gallup does, it's been doing this for years. What are the chief concerns of the American people today? Jobs and employment, the economy. Healthcare is there. It's, I think, fourth. And what did our leader, our president propose? It's Obamacare is a failure. His economic policies has failed. Obamacare is a failure. Why? It's the government, the federal government, injecting itself into the healthcare industry and royally screwing it up. It's providing you with less freedom. And they keep postponing it and postponing it until after the elections. Why? They even know it's a disaster. It should be repealed. And again, that's just another example of what the American people are demanding, and the elites in Washington don't listen to them. Don't listen to them. They're not for free enterprise. They're not for encouraging individuals to start a business, hire people, and grow this economy. The United States economy is perfectly capable of growing at rates of 4 and 5 and 6%, but not under these set of regulations as well as high tax rates. We need a pro-growth economic policy, and we don't have it. And that also requires a much smaller government. With that, I'll be signing off for a week. I'll be back, I believe it's the 17th, I'll be back Monday, March 17th, when the school reopens. Richland College, like most colleges in the United States, will be closing down for spring break. And for most colleges, that is next week. So the campus will be closed from starting Monday all the way through the 17th. In other words, from the 10th through the 17th, it'll be reopening on Monday the 17th at 6 o'clock in the morning. So I wish all our students, faculty, and staff a terrific spring break. Catch up on your sleep. Catch up on your grading. Catch up on your course preparation. Just catch up, but kick back. Have some rest and relaxation. This has been rather a heavy show, but it's something that needs to be said because there are very, very few people in America that are saying it. It takes courage today to even speak what most people are thinking. That's how bad it's become. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Well, thank you very much. And remember, if you want to look at my notes for this show, go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. Thank you. Have a great spring break. And now back.